The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. 1 million babies a week, that's the birth rate for the entirety of the world, and most of them are born in impoverished, squalid conditions in the poor nations of the world. And it's just not a good time to be born. It just isn't. Not in the 118 nations of the world other than the United States, and I'm telling you, increasingly, it's not a good time to be born in the United States either. But in the world at large, the odds are 4-1 that a child will not receive any medical attention at birth or in his entire life, and if he survives to school age, and the chances of that, depending upon which country you speak of, whether the Philippines, some of the Central American and South American countries, some of the African or the Asian countries, and especially India, whether or not he survives to school age, the odds even then are 2-1 that he will never get any actual formal schooling. If he does get to school, the odds are then 3-1 that he will never complete elementary school. And it's almost certain that he will have to go to work at age 12. This is the average baby being born today, if, of course, the world is still here when he's 12 years of age. With that same if in mind, he will work to eat and eat badly and never eat enough. And if the world is still here, by the time he's 40, he'll probably die then. This was in a large single-page notice or ad, you could call it, in the Newsweek magazine not so long ago, under the title, "Is This a Good Year to Be Born?" No, it's just not a good time to be born. But in spite of all of these tragic deaths, and in spite of the attempt of so many people through so many different media of care packages and food and medicine and clothing and education and massive aid shipments to try to stave off the tragedy of the mass starvation, the high infant mortality rate of so many of the world's babies, still there are 1 million babies a week born. And even in spite of the tragic deaths, we are in the midst of a fantastic population explosion. We're in a fantastic food crisis. The world food reserves and supplies are dwindling rapidly. United States food reserves are way down. Yet there are far more hungry mouths to feed now than there were 5 years ago, when the United States seemed to have fantastic reserves, which we apparently blithely and happily assumed were practically inexhaustible. Over the years, this program, The World Tomorrow, has been candidly looking at the bad news of today's perplexing world and daring to foretell the good news of the world beyond, the age on ahead of us, to give you the outcome in advance. But you know, almost as if to say the hour is always darkest just before the dawn. That's pretty true in human conditions and trends in society. And the problem with many millions of people today in playing their bizarre game of hide-and-go-seek, of hide their eyes from reality and go seek their pleasures and escapism in order to deny reality exists, is not going to make reality go away. And at least this program has been willing to admit the trends and the conditions are as bad as they are. It makes some few people a little bit angry. Just like someone who is in a home late at night, and he's in a profound sleep, and suddenly someone is bending over him, rudely shaking his shoulder and screaming and yelling at him, and he's trying to fight the covers off his face and get at this guy and say, "Go away and let me alone. I'm trying to sleep. What are you doing trying to wake me up?" And the fellow is simply saying, "Sir, get up. Your house is on fire." The first inclination before the real awesome portent of those words sink in is anger at being disturbed. And many of us are a little bit angry sometimes when we are disturbed from our own personal pursuits and pleasures, but you are living in a world on fire. And it's about time you got aroused from your sleep and your lethargy and took a good, long, candid, crystal clear view of conditions exactly the way they are. Over the years, this program has talked to the growing trends which spell awesome disaster for this world unless they are averted. Today, the dwindling food reserves and the skyrocketing populations of Earth represent the single most ominous, awesome, and unbelievable problem facing mankind. And beside these trends, the Vietnam War pales into insignificance. Nothing is more filled with disastrous portent. It's the biggest single problem facing man today. And yet few people want to talk about it, Few people want to pay any attention to it. As a matter of fact, I got a letter one time. Now, you begin to wonder just how far out of touch with reality can some people become? I know, and you know, or do you, that more than 19 million Americans need psychiatric care. That's a fantastic statement, but it's true. I guess I got a letter from one of those 19 million. I don't know exactly who he or even she was. I forget now, and even the part of the country, but in talking about the tremendous crowded conditions, I was brought up quite short by this letter, which had me to know that there is still plenty of room out in the country, and there's lots of room to stand around, and that any kook or any nut, this letter went on and on, could see that there isn't any population explosion. Why, there are vast acres where there aren't even any houses yet. I just sort of sat back. It sort of takes your breath, doesn't it? Kind of takes the words out of your mouth. Have you seen the cover of the January 9th, 1967 Newsweek magazine, wherever you live? Now, even in Australia, you can buy that American magazine. It's difficult to get. But at any rate, you don't have quite the same problems in Australia, where the government slogan of populate or perish is in seemingly direct controversy with all the other problems that are extant in many areas of the earth. But of course, even that slogan of populate or perish in Australia takes into account the population explosion of the vast Asiatic areas to the north, and of all of the areas of India, and of China, and of Japan, and of Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines. And the government in Australia is seriously concerned about the possibility of being absorbed by the more than half a billion population of India and the like. More than 500 million people there, and more being added every single year. But the Newsweek cover was about the agony of getting anywhere. And here was a person who apparently assumed that just because people weren't standing jammed like sardines in every part of the earth and on each other's heads, that we still had lots of room to grow. Apparently completely out of touch with reality of the fact that you've got to have clean air to breathe, and you've got to have clean water to drink, and you've got to have good, pure food to eat, and that these are rapidly disappearing. Sure, there's plenty of room to bury all of humanity in the Grand Canyon. That doesn't cut any ice. We can't feed ourselves. Only 7.7% of the Earth's surface is arable or cultivatable or tillable, which can produce food for mankind's consumption. So regardless as to what some few people who are out of touch with reality may think about it, it is true that today, dwindling food reserves and skyrocketing populations are the biggest single pressing problem of mankind. And beside this problem, taxes, politics, wages, crime, divorce, pollution, all these problems seem minor in comparison. Yet even those are not minor, but terribly urgent, immediately pressing. Some years ago, in a series of broadcasts, through the advance news of tomorrow's world, I cited the growing dry cycles in the United States and Australia and much of the world. Repeatedly, month after month and year after year, for about 30 years, the pages of a unique magazine that comes to you absolutely free of charge, The Plain Truth, has warned about dry cycles, about drought, about famine, has identified in the pages of Bible prophecy, believe it or not, the nations of Britain, of Australia, of South Africa, of Canada, of Northwestern Europe, and of the United States, and has specifically pointed out impending upset weather conditions, coming drought, alarming drops in crop production. This over the years, not just once in a while, but over the years, consistently. Now, as I went through a series of programs about that portent, quite some time ago, a huge ad appeared in the Wall Street Journal, that was about a year and a half ago or more, entitled Famine Stalks the Earth, addressed directly to the President of the United States about the dwindling reserves in the United States and the shipment of every fourth bushel of grain in the United States to India. Then the United States was busily sending in a vast armada, the largest single peacetime armada ever assembled, 600 vessels and more, to India. Vast wheat reserves. I said at that time it wouldn't work. I said it would only temporarily delay the crisis. I said that that would be at the terrible expense of dwindling national reserves, which we couldn't afford to be without because dry cycles, drought, were coming. Now, recently, an issue of one of the most respected weekly news magazines, the U.S. News and World Report, under the title of an article, Giveaway Food is Giving Out, and Still the World Hungers, gives you the up-to-the-moment picture. It cited how a mountain of surplus U.S. grain, and that was right on the cover of the Plain Truth magazine, an absolute mountain piled right in the streets of a western farm, city, or town of excess grain at that time. But even by the time that article appeared, that excess had already been gone, and the vast government grain bins were dwindling rapidly, and they are now below emergency levels. A mountain of surplus, then, has been used up in the fight against hunger, yet in spite of that, the world food gap has widened. To protect its grain reserves, the United States is turning to a new Food for Freedom plan now, in which self-help is the keystone instead of the United States trying to busily feed everybody. But here's the way the article began. The United States is being forced to revise plans for waging a worldwide war on hunger. American grain surpluses that seemed staggering 5 years ago have been exhausted in an effort to stave off mass starvation in poor countries abroad. May I point out that those same poor countries rarely, if ever, back U.S. policies. While United States surpluses have been eaten up, population in most of the hungry nations has been rising faster than food output can be increased, and the result is that the world's food gap is rising. It is widening. It's growing bigger. Failure of the United States to close that food gap in only one country. That one country, of course, smaller in area, but bigger by far in population. India, more than half a billion people, has convinced President Johnson and his foreign aid experts that a whole new approach is needed in the battle against hunger. Because India, you see, proved to be an absolute bottomless pit. I reported in that series of programs how fantastic percentages of the bushels of grain that went over to India were destroyed before they ever reached the mouths of the hungry children and the people for whom they were intended, by blight, by insect infestation and damage, by rodents, of which there are more millions than there are people, being eaten by so-called sacred cows, eaten and nibbled on by monkeys, stolen away and secreted by black marketeers, where 1 pound of wheat in New Delhi was bringing up to $25 equivalent, where at one time people were literally offering their children for sale or trade for food. And who wants more children in India? Well, I said so long before. Of course, I'm not any government policymaker. I don't expect government people to listen to this program and revise their opinions or their policies. That's not the point. This program is commissioned to warn this world of what is occurring and to warn all nations and to tell you exactly what is ahead and then to tell those few who will listen that there is a way out, that there is good news, that there is protection from calamity in the years ahead. Whoever has an ear to hear, let him hear. If he wants to listen to the truth of the way world conditions really are, and then to see and to hear the only good news about the outcome, then it's available. Now, all told, in the past 12 months, the equivalent of 1/4 of the entire U.S. wheat crop has been shipped to India. That's in the 1 year alone of 1966. But those shipments were going on in the years before, and the years before that. As I said, there were over 600 ships assembled just to carry the grain over there. 9 million tons of grain committed to the effort to close India's food gap. Now, the vast movement of United States food supporting 60 million Indians is not achieving any improvement in diet, said Lester R. Brown, who is head of International Agricultural Development for the United States Department of Agriculture. And the reason is double. First of all, India's fantastic population, already bigger than a half a billion, as I've said, and it's increasing at the rate of 14 million people a year. That is bigger than the total population of Australia. Every single year, more than the total combined population of Australia is added to the population of India. At the same time, drought, flood, famine. So at the very same time of this fantastic increase, in spite of the fantastic infant mortality, in spite of the starvation, in spite of the fact it's 4-1,
The child will receive no medical attention in spite of the fact that the odds are 2-1 he'll never go to school, in spite of the fact the odds are 3-1 that he'll never complete his elementary education, in spite of the fact that he'll probably die at age 29, unless the life expectancy has gone up in India beyond 29, and it was about 29 the last time I checked. In spite of all of those factors, there are 14 million being added every year above and beyond all of the mortality. Now, we can sit in the comfort of our living rooms anywhere from Podunk to Paducah, and we can claim it isn't happening, but that isn't going to cut any ice. That's not going to change it. Just a few hours by jet would prove it to you. A few hours by jet would do a lot of people some good. Some of you could travel to some of the areas of this earth that I have seen, that some political observers have seen, that some newsmen have seen. If you could see with your own eyes people lying with their stomachs protruding, if you could see people sleeping on newspapers on rain-soaked streets, if you could see little children with absolutely no clothes to cover their nudity out trying to hawk papers or steal or sell you a group of sticks, a handful of sticks for a fire, for a grubby nickel or so, it might drive the lesson home. But you see, Mr. Brown gives these statistics. The world is adding 1 million a week. 1 million a week being born. And most of the new people are in underdeveloped countries. In some of the poor countries, population is increasing at the rate of 3% a year. Now, that sounds real tiny. But on the other hand, when you take it as a figure with world populations instead of interest rates in a savings account, it's a little bit staggering, because at that small 3% rate, population doubles in one generation in any given nation, in the world at large, and increases 18 times in one century. Divide that century into quarters. You got a generation. To an agriculturalist, that kind of arithmetic is absolutely frightening, said Mr. Brown. He points out that world supply of grain measured at the end of each year has declined steadily since 1961. There was a chart accompanying this article in this very respected and highly regarded weekly U.S. news magazine. And the source of that chart was the United States Department of Agriculture. And here was a plummeting line. In terms of 1 million metric tons, and it has come from 136 million metric tons, which represented the world's grain supply at the end of the year in 1961. The figure was 136 million metric tons. It has plummeted from that time so few years ago to 50.5 million metric tons by the end of 1967. And that is a very graphic estimate depending upon the curve that has been set up. It was on this chart in the U.S. News and World Report. From 136 million, which was not sufficient at that time to feed all the people in 1961. Now from 1961 through the end of 1967, there will have been added another 14 million people a year in India alone. 1 million people a week in the world at large. That's 52 million a year in the world at large, and that figure increases each year. It's kind of like compounded interest. Now, these statistics are true. We can't get around them. They're absolutely true, and they are awesome, and they're frightening, and they're ominous, and they're continuous, and there has to be an answer. And there is an answer. There is a definite answer, and it's good news, but first we need to know why it's happening. What brought it about? Why is the world in the condition that it is? Now, the agriculture department has reported that it wants to free up a lot of additional millions of acres, about 50 million, now idled under federal farm programs, but they find they can't get a lot of the farmers to cooperate. You see, a tremendous percentage of the wheat in the United States is winter wheat, and that's 80% of the total U.S. wheat crop. Now, it was up only 26.2%. On the basis of the December 22nd report of 1966, total wheat production in 1967 would only reach one and about a little more than 500,000 bushels, an increase of only 300 million bushels over the 1966 output. But, and here is the big question, drought. is building up. And winter wheat is 80% of the crop. And winter wheat is already in the ground at the time that I am doing this program. And at the time that I am doing this program, sometime after this magazine has come out, there have already been fantastic blizzards and dumped snow and winter storms all over the vast wheat belts of the United States. And the U.S. Weather Bureau is concerned as it reported in its December 20th report that growth of winter wheat was at a virtual standstill because of lack of moisture all across the central and southern Great Plains, a major wheat-producing area. Well, there are a part of the statistics and the facts about it. And even though U.S. food production capability, unmatched in the history of the world so far as we know, has been able to come to the temporary aid of the peoples of India, now it is admitted by high government planners that this was only a sort of a temporary averting of a tragedy which could have struck years before, and that in spite of that outpouring of the fantastic reserves of the most wealthy nation on the face of the earth, which reserves are all but gone and are now below the crucial emergency levels, in spite of that fact, there is a wider rift, a wider gap between food production and available food and the mouths that eat it in India today than there was in 1961. Well, now, I said that was going to occur years ago. That doesn't make me anything especially, except that I happen to have a news source that few people are willing to pay any attention to before me, and that is your Bible. You've got it in your home, too, but the chances are you've never given it much of a chance. Now, people get all intrigued and excited about some private person who might predict whether or not hem lines are coming up or down, or whether or not somebody's going to be best-dressed lady next year, or whether or not some political candidate is going to be successful. We become so excited about the little nitpicking points of news. What about the overall awesome trends of the very salvation and continuance of mankind? How would you like to find out in advance whether or not you are going to be here, whether or not there will even be a world tomorrow, whether or not we'll still be on the earth in the 1970s and 80s? You can know, because one-third of the Bible is prophecy, and prophecy singles out and identifies the major nations on this earth, and we, the peoples of the United States and the British Commonwealth of Nations, are identified over and over again. And a specific prophecy toward us is given in the 26th chapter of Leviticus, clear back in the beginning part of the Bible. And there it was said, if we did not hearken to God's laws, there is a God and you can prove it. Write to the book, it does God exist in the proof of the Bible. People suspect there may be a God, but they've never checked to find out what kind. What are his laws? Does he exist, really? Is he a personal spirit being? Has man, with his intellect, been created and placed on this earth? Or did he come from scum, or climb from slime, or evolve from beasts and four-footed creeping creatures? If you want to read one of the silliest ideas that pales a mother goose rhyme into insignificance, then write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine and read about the fable of the first fateful flight. Archaeopteryx, the so-called link between crocodiles and birds. You would not guess, said one evolutionist, and it seems strange to some people, he said, that the closest living relatives to our birds of today are crocodiles. No, you wouldn't guess that, and I will admit, in the words of that evolutionist, that is strange. You will see how strange, and I think you'll even get a chuckle out of it, whether you're a university professor and you believe in evolution, or whether you are the layman who feels a little bit awed by it. I think you'll get a kick out of that article, because it shows you in the admissions of evolutionists themselves the unbelievable faith that some of these people have. Statements like, in spite of the absolute paucity of the fossil record, they expect you to believe it nevertheless. In spite of the patchiness of the evidence, they expect you to believe it. Statements that will prove to you that evolutionists and ornithologists in particular say to you, in effect, Yes, we admit that we have practically nothing to go on. We admit the vast missing chapters of the rocks. We admit no intermediate species. We admit all of the fantastic gaps in our theory. But, you see, we're so convinced that we treat the evolution of birds from slithering lizards and reptiles as axiomatic in any given discussion on the subject. So what we wish to say to you, the evolutionist claim before the layman is, our opinions count, and yours do not. That we, in spite of the patchiness of our evidence, have come up with a theory which you need not concern yourselves about. We'll tell you what to think. Now, you'll see statements that will just absolutely appall you. So if there's anyone wondering whether or not there is a God, well, you better get busy and prove it. You won't have very much longer, because then God will prove it to you. There is a God, and he's about to step in and prove to the world that he does exist. But here in the 26th chapter of Leviticus, that great God centuries before, talking of our people, told of a time when, as he said in verse 19 of that chapter, I will, because we don't keep his laws, because we've ignored him, because we've forgotten him, we don't know his identity, we're claiming he is dead, our cities are ridden with crime and pornography and filth and license and violence, our divorce rates skyrocket, our people are disillusioned and frustrated and fearful. They hate authority. Our peoples are going down morally, ethically, spiritually, mentally, physically, and we're going to pay for it. He said, I will break the pride of your power, and the pride of our power has been broken. We have no national pride and purpose anymore. We're a bunch of sick willy-nillies, a bunch of pallid-faced, soft-fingered characters that haven't got the backbone of a jellyfish. It would seem one of the big powers on the face of the earth can't win a war in a little tiny country that's only the size of one of its states. He said, I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. That's the sun shining down, a picture of drought and famine. And your strength, listen to this remarkable prophecy, your strength shall be spent in vain. What is our strength? The staff of life, the stalk of wheat, the bread that you bake from it. Has it been spent in vain? I take the words out of that article, failure convinced our leaders. It's not a good policy. Your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her increase, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruits. That is coming to pass because the God of heaven, who pronounced it so many centuries ago, knew the course that human beings were going to take. And our peoples are about to be punished in no uncertain terms unless we wake up and discover the right way to live. You need to write for this booklet that goes on beyond and gives you the good news. It tells you about this drought and famine. It tells you about what's happening to all of society, but it gives you the good news beyond. It's entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's by the same title as this program. The World Tomorrow booklet, full color. You can read it in one sitting. Absolutely eye-opening. Admits all the problems the way they really are, but then tells you the outcome in advance, in the light of Bible prophecy. And request the booklets on the United States and British Commonwealth in prophecy, and also request the ones on Does God Exist and the Proof of the Bible. Now, that's not too much to remember. The one by the title of this program, and then the one on the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy, the book that's Does God Exist and the Proof of the Bible, and the Plain Truth Magazine. They're free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.